Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
All right. Welcome back to another installment. Our penultimate installment, I believe. I always look for opportunities to use that word.
Love that word. You love it.
Our X-Men rewatch. Wow. Really? I mean, our next to last, I guess, because we still have Logan. I did want to very quickly, before we jump into this one,
that's what penultimate note. Means.
Well, okay. No, but here's the thing. Like, I don't, whenever I say that, I never know if people think that I'm referring to Deadpool as being part of that group or not.
Oh,
and then, like,
sure.
I also kind of think of Logan as a separate thing, too, although maybe I shouldn't after this movie. Anyway, what I do want to say before I forget is we talked in our last episode covering Daredevil. We talked about Fantastic Four and how that would kind of fit into this Fox detour. And we decided, after much prayerful consideration, that we are going to save both of the original Fantastic Four films and the 2015 Josh Trank film, which I have still never seen, for preparation connected to Fantastic Four by Matt Shackman, which will be here before we know it.
Seems to make more sense in general.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think really the only reason we threw in Daredevil where we did is because I can't imagine it would ever make sense to watch that movie again unless we embark on some sort of like global rewatch everything Marvel's ever done ahead of Secret Wars, at which point, you know.
Right.
We'll see. But
good point.
I think you're right. It does make more sense. I am glad that we got to talk Daredevil because it was really fun and because of the Jennifer Garner cameo stuff.
Yeah.
But I was struck by watching the movie we're about to talk about. I think that this does kind of weirdly work within like a linear X-Men storyline.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't hate that we did the detour, but I hope that it doesn't kind of take away from what I'm surprised could kind of work with an ongoing narrative. So that's my like opening disclaimer. But you and I, as usual, have not talked about New Mutants at all since we both watched it, I guess, today. So I'm excited to hear what you think.
Yeah. Well, I'm just so in the Deadpool and Wolverine headspace right now. And so, no, it didn't take away. I will say, if you were doing this journey with us, or if you were doing it for the first time, yeah, I think I'd flip-flop them. I'd just keep the X-Men timeline going, and then maybe post-Deadpool and Wolverine catch up on, like the stuff like Daredevil, Fantastic Four, etc. But it didn't take away, because I've watched them all so recently. The New Mutants from 2020. Look, Rob, I want to kick this off. I can vibe with this movie a little bit. Just a little bit.
Ooh, there he is. There he is. Okay.
So there are two specific things that I can vibe with, I can get down with. And that's how I'm going to start us. First off, okay, I can get down with this genre.
Yeah. It's unique.
It's unique, and we don't have a lot of it, not only here, but also in the MCU. And it's kind of right up my alley. I don't love horror films. Would you call this a horror movie?
I mean, at parts for sure. Like, to me, there are, Like, as much as Multiverse of Madness does like zombie looking things and has some kind of like freaky moments, mm-hmm. whenever they tease that as like the first horror movie within the MCU, I feel like what I was imagining was something like this.
Yeah. This is my scene, man. Not in general, not the whole film, but this genre. I love the thriller genre that borders on horror, not slashers, not gore fest, not super gross, but this, it almost had a 10 Cloverfield Lane vibe, didn't it? Like people being trapped.
Yeah.
And like, it's eerie. This is my genre. So I can get down with this. And I do appreciate, which leads to my second thing I can get down with. I appreciate this genre within the context of our rewatch. I appreciate the isolated story nature of this. Like, this film is not super well done, but the idea of it is a great idea for not only the X-Men universe, I also think the MCU, which is because it's so isolated to this singular compound. I think only one sequence, the very first sequence, is outside of that compound. Nothing conflicts with our timeline at all. It's not a reboot. It easily could be going on during the Dark Phoenix times, especially since we saw that Essex Corporation teaser at the end of, I think, Apocalypse, right?
Yeah.
It all could be happening, and I love it. Okay, it's not this, but I love the WandaVision-ness of it in that, okay, let's just look at what one chapter of a few mutants that are struggling, like what they're going through and what's happening in this singular compound. I love that idea. In a way, it almost feels like, I say WandaVision, it almost feels like what we praise the MCU television for, like what the MCU television is capable of doing. So I can get down with this genre in general, and I can also get down with the isolated side story nature of a film like this.
Man, what great points. I totally agree. And I was cracking up midway through this because I'd never seen this movie at all. I knew very little about it. I lumped this in with Dark Phoenix as one of these kind of like lame duck X-Men movies. Although this one, I think, even came out during COVID or
2020.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I need to check the date, but I'm almost positive it was either like during COVID or right before. Anyway,
but not a COVID film in that it didn't affect the filming or anything like that.
Oh, right. But yeah, just the release kind of maybe it came out around the same time Tenet did. I think thematically and even plot wise, like setting up the, like what we were talking about in our Deadpool episode on the main feed, this idea that people would kind of take advantage of the mutant gene and try to like monetize and capitalize on it. But by building mercenaries, like we talked about how that was kind of an interesting idea that hadn't fully been explored or fleshed out in the X-Men universe. And that is kind of something that makes a lot more sense in the X-Men universe than it does in the MCU, because it's like everything we've always said is a challenge. Like the MCU has really made it to where, you know, for the longest time, there are only a handful of superpowered people and you kind of know where they're all coming from. Whereas the X-Men, it's the total opposite. I think that this is kind of what you do with that premise. Like you find different little subgenres, you find ways to kind of reimagine the prejudice angle that has kind of been done to death across the franchise. Like I think this idea of kids that are defenseless because they're all basically orphans, they are being manipulated and used, but in a way that's like not, it's not just Deadpool where they're all like chained to a wall and someone's coming in and like beating them all the time. Like there's like nuance to it because they're kind of being made to go through this weird therapy rehabilitation process thing that you can kind of believe is like well-intentioned for a while. It's an interesting idea, I think. Like I liked it both just as a premise, and I like it now, I think, as a bridge between Dark Phoenix and Deadpool. Like, I think if I were to kind of, now that I've seen this, I think if I had the chance to go back and resort our watch order, that kind of makes perfect sense to me as like, Dark Phoenix kind of shows Xavier potentially retiring. We don't really know. But then, you know, letting this kind of bridge the gap over to where we pick up with the X-Men again in Deadpool and Deadpool 2. I don't know. I was just pleasantly kind of surprised with the whole thing. But
Me too, we should get into
more of the mechanics. I know that you've got some notes that are probably more specific than I do.
Before the mechanics, what a fascinating journey we've been on, man. I know we have one more film to go with Logan and Deadpool 2, but you know what I mean? It's specifically on the Friends from Work Plus side. It's just been a crazy study in the expectations you take into a movie and what happens when you do that.
Yeah.
Like the X2 and X1 stuff really surprised me. The positive expectations I took in to First Class that didn't get met surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, like thinking Apocalypse wasn't that bad and then watching it and being so bored surprised me. And then the Dark Phoenix one, just shocking in that I really actually enjoyed it. Couldn't find hardly any flaws with it on a major scale. The Daredevil stuff was the worst movie I've ever watched on this podcast. And then we get to this New Mutants thing. And this is another one that, like you said, just like Dark Phoenix, I had heard from a couple of friends. Even last week, I talked to my friend Peter. Shout out, Peter. I know he's listening. And he had asked me, are you going to watch the New Mutants? And just like Dark Phoenix, I had kind of gotten that heads up. Like, be careful when you watch the New Mutants. And I don't know, man. Right. It was short. It was tight. And just overall, pretty enjoyable. Definitely exceeding my expectations.
I was pretty locked in.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's what I'll say. Those are the two things that I really liked about this, the genre and then the whole discussion we just had about how this kind of movie works so well in these kinds of things, especially when you keep it short, tight, isolated. So that's my overall thought. I really did like it. I did like watching it. That being said, there are some things that are not great as just a film goes. You know, I thought the biggest thing pulling this movie down was the acting.
Man,
is kind of strange because we've talked a lot about the writing concerns on films like Daredevil last week and things like that. But here, I didn't actually think the writing was so bad in both the dialogue and the overarching plot. But I thought this is the first time in a while where just straight up the acting performances for me brought it down.
Yeah. Dude, you know what's crazy, aside from the fact that like I had the exact same thought, what's crazy to me is I would have come into this saying, if nothing else, Anya Taylor-Joy is in this movie and she's a good actor. And she's
the guy from Stranger Things.
Right. And it's crazy to me, and maybe it's just how much things have changed since 2020 for her career. Because it's like between Queen's Gambit and the Emma movie Furiosa. She was in, Furiosa, the Northman, like.
She was briefly in Dune 2, right? Really briefly.
Oh, was she?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, Robbie. That one I'm sure of. I don't even have to look up. She's briefly in that film as Paul's sister.
Oh, you're so right. You're so right. I forgot about that.
I know him.
Yeah, which is perfect casting because she has like terrifyingly large eyes. I felt so bamboozled because I do genuinely, I'm a big fan of Anya Taylor-Joy as an actor. I think she is really great. She was not great in this movie, man.
Okay, hear me out. Hear me out. I have two parts on my notes regarding her. Did you think at all that she was really not great to start? She's the reason I took the note specifically. Tough acting. Man.
Yeah.
She was the one that was standing out in a bad way. But I did think she kind of redeemed it in the back half. I feel like once we got to know her a little bit, like, come on, there was a pretty good, like, heartbreaking moment with her and Danny.
Yeah.
In the jail cell.
Yeah.
And when she was fighting, I thought it was kind of dope. Like, I thought
when she came back around a little bit. I loved when she was fighting. The action stuff, like, when she, like, I mean, one, I also thought that a lot of this movie looked pretty good. Like,
yeah.
Like, the giant CGI.
To be fair. It's 2020.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, the CGI bear was not like great, but the sword looked not terrible. The sword looked great. Sunspot, like Roberto, looked great. I thought. The cannonball stuff looked good.
Shout out X97, right? Same.
Right. Roberto? Well, yeah. Also the gosh episode was it episode 3 of X97 with the Inferno stuff.
Oh, yeah, it was
like. That was super similar, which obviously, like, that's adapting the comic, not this movie. But I was kind of glad to have watched that so recently. But yeah, before I forget, I do agree. She, like, in her action, like, when she was doing, like, the badass thing, like, fighting, it was really, like, I thought that worked really well. But it was,
I
like,
think
her.
The super crazy. Talk to yourself like abnormally mean out of nowhere thing was a little bit forced for her. I also thought, I hate to say this, the guy from Stranger Things was one of the worst parts too. Here's the thing. The acting for me was tough in general because I thought the main girl was not very good.
Agreed.
I guess the Scottish girl or whatever, like that would probably be my favorite character.
Yeah, no, same. Maisie Williams, who's from Game of Thrones.
But I didn't think the cast in general worked great. However, the story kind of took over and they grew on me a little bit towards the end. I just love twisty movies like this though. So the like reveal that Donnie is doing it all. Is it Danny or Donnie? Help me out.
I think Danny.
I just watched it. The reveal that she's doing it all, the reveal of they're working for Essex, and then it's actually this giant bear that her dad had taught her about. Like, I was into the twisty nature of it, too. And then the action sequences were pretty dope. So,
yeah. I felt like this was such a – I mean, it's a lesson in why horror movies can work so well. Oftentimes what you have is a fairly low budget and maybe like one or two like star performers kind of like, you know, normally like a, and with that you can do so much because you're building tension constantly. Like a creaking door is enough to kind of like get people leaning forward. And I just thought like, it's funny to me how, look, I am not saying at all that this is like a better movie because it's not. We just got finished talking about how like Deadpool was executed so well on almost every level.
Oh boy.
And like for what it was doing, did it so well. But no, but my point is like because I just watched that so recently, like one thing that you don't often get in the superhero genre is that kind of like leaning in, like what is about, like what's about to happen, tension.
Right.
And we talk about how, like, compare this to, like, Apocalypse, right? Where it's, like, the whole world is falling
so
apart
bored.
And you're, like, yawning.
Glazed over eyes. Exactly. Exactly.
And then here it's, like, you know, is the priest, like, in the confession booth? Like, and I'm, like.
That was terrifying.
You know, can't look away.
Robbie, we're in total lockstep here. One of my notes was just some good horror moments are happening. And it's all those things. Like the priest thing was legitimately terrifying. I thought when Anya Taylor-Joy was in the jail cell and then the door slowly creaked open and then it was just the painting of those guys that were faceless as the paint starts melting was legitimately pretty scary. Yeah, and then those guys were pretty creepy. Very much some Stranger Things vibes.
Yeah,
especially given the actor that was in it. You know how Candace and Emily on Screensaver do that thing where they go, if you liked this, you might like this?
Uh-huh.
I kind of love that. And this movie made me think of that, where it's kind of like, if you like X-Men meets 10 Cloverfield Lane meets Stranger Things, this would be your scene. For the most part. And my note right after the good horror moments was, this is kind of dope. And I love whenever I get to take notes like that, because what I mean by that is, this is better than I thought it was going to be. And I love those notes.
Than it's supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought the Stranger Things the Stranger Things comparison to, and I also thought It by Stephen King, specifically like the movie that came out in 2017, which is very Stranger Things, or Stranger Things is very that, depending on kind of how you look at what is influencing what. But I think what I love about all of those things, like even going back to like season one of Stranger Things, is again, it's that like you get each, it's like the horror trope, like you get each kid or teenager alone and then have them see something really freaky and then know that no one's really going to believe them. And it's like they're tropes, but it works really well here. And what I loved is that it's not like the one thing that's really hard in horror movies, I think, is like satisfyingly explaining the threat. Like, it is always so much better like in the imagining. And then as soon as the horror movies have like the reveal is when it kind of, they get separated out from like, oh wow, that actually really works. Or it's like, oh, that's, you know, now I'm just looking at like a CGI zombie and I'm not really afraid.
Right. Fun brainstorming session for you real quick. Maybe off air sometime. Text me. I would love to know your list of films that the tension is built so well and then the climax actually exceeds that of the tension, because so many films are built on the suspense and the suspense is so good that no matter what you do, it can't live up to the ending. But I'd love to hear, what are your movies that's not the case? Like right off the top of my head, real quick, I would say 10 Cloverfield Lane and Get Out come to mind, where
all of the tension
that was being built up in Get Out, the reveal ends up being like way bigger and wilder than I could have even imagined throughout the suspense. Mm-hmm. And I think the same thing for 10 Cloverfield Lane, which is a really good sleeper movie, by the way, if you're into this thriller scene.
Yeah.
So good, and no one talked about it, I feel like. But that's the perfect example of a movie where you go, okay, the suspense is being built up. Is it this? Is it this? And then it ends up being like all of it, like yes to all of it. So anyways, think about that off air. But anyways, here they build up suspense, and how did you feel like it delivered?
Well, I think what I liked about it is I thought that it was Ileana that was like not intentionally but causing those things at first. So I kind of got psyched out whenever you find out it's Danny. So the suspense works in that way. But then what I also like is like, it is like they make that her mutant power. And so it's fitting, I guess. Like even if the tension doesn't pay off like spectacularly, it doesn't like fizzle and it doesn't feel out of left field. Like I think the problem with a lot of horror movies is it's like you wind up needing to either just it can go like one of two ways. You try to somehow ground it in some crazy scientific thing happened and created this like whatever monster ghost thing, or you just go like, yeah, it's a ghost. And either way, it's just kind of hard for those things sometimes to like to live up just tonally. Like even if it's like I'm not saying that those are ridiculous plot points, but it's like you're waiting for some kind of crazy reveal. And I just think that here it does kind of like, I don't know, it makes sense within this universe that would just be her mutant power. And it's satisfying, I think, with kind of the way the film starts. Like it's something where I think you can kind of track what this movie is about throughout, which is more than you can say for a lot of superhero movies, especially a lot of the, you know, non-MCU superhero movies.
So let's do that for a second, just so we're totally clear on all of this stuff, okay? Donnie has this evil and good inside of her, and as the evil gets larger and larger, she can't control it, and that's what ended up killing her tribe/family. The guy from Stranger Things, I'm blanking on his name, he was working in the mines with his father and got claustrophobic and couldn't control his powers and then ended up killing his dad and his whole crew. And so that's why he's there from that trauma and from the danger. Roberto tried to be intimate with his girlfriend, got too hot, flamed up, and killed her. That's why he sees the zombie, like, burned person in the pool.
Yeah, which was, like, one of the freakier moments. The hand.
Yeah, on really good freaky moment there. That's what I meant by good horror stuff. Classic. Yeah. Ileana was molested by men? Question mark?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I was trying to figure out at first, like, horrifying. Like, what's weird about it is all of the other visions were kind of literal.
Well, but hold on. I think I couldn't understand the white mask thing, but if you think about it, all the visions were literal, but with their horror twist. Like, I'm not sure that the girl Roberto kissed would be that burned or look like that. So there was still like a twist on that.
Yeah, that's true.
So I guess my understanding was, or my interpretation was, that Ileana was molested or attacked by men, maybe even wearing masks, but she now, in the warped sense of that, is seeing those crazy creatures instead of just the people.
I think that that's right.
And then the girl who plays the love interest tried to go Raina? To a priest. Yeah, Raina. Yeah. Tried to go to her priest, and he branded her as a witch and tortured her.
Yeah, which, like, also a good, like, the confessional scene, and also the guy, like, in the shower, both well done.
The guy in the shower, golly, horrifying.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's...
Okay. Can I poke fun of two things real quick that I just... You know, we praised the writing and said it's mostly acting. I did think there were a few writing things. Like, I wrote down, for example, who goes up into the attic and takes lie detector tests for fun? Like, part of Anya Taylor-Joy's too rigid douchiness at the beginning is partially the writing too, because, like, they're like, let's go up and hang out. We can do whatever we want. No one's watching us here. And then she's like, well, you can't come. Ugh. But then they go anyways. And then when they get up there, they're like, you have to do this. And they all answer one question. They're like, okay, enough of you. You're boring. And they move to the next one. It's like, nothing about the lie detector scene feels natural. It just feels like the writers were like, we got to reveal some truths. How can we do that? Let's have them find a lie detector test. Like, there's no none of it made sense to me on a practical
level. That's true. Like, it's hard to even, I guess they're supposed to be playing truth or dare, but, like, no dare is the whole joke. But
why was she so resistant to Donnie coming with, and then 2 seconds later was asking her on the lie detector? Like,
right.
That's the kind of stuff that's like, she's forcing this.
Well, also, like, I feel like that there are certain lines, because you're totally right. Like, in general, there were a lot of lines where I was like, you know, I do think this is poor delivery. Like, this is not a badly written line. Now, maybe that's like a bad director, and maybe that's part of it. Like, I do feel that for the most part, this is another case of the action scenes and the like horror scenes feeling really well done and the emotional kind of intimate scenes not working as well.
Right.
But there are a couple of lines writing wise like that where like why is she so like, okay, it's not just that she's bullying Magic or Ileana. Like she's like racist for some reason.
Right.
Like, why is that such a big feature of her? Like, it's one thing if in a movie, well, okay, a couple things. One, if this is a movie that was made like 20 years ago and there's like a comment like that, like there was a comment like that in Daredevil that we didn't even get to. That's like, oh, wow, that is like a crazy thing to hear in a in like a wide circulated movie.
But this was made 4 years ago.
Right. And they do like it's intentional. Like it's not like a throwaway like she's supposed to be like really against a Native American person being there for some reason. And it was such a weird call. And I do feel like Anya Taylor-Joy just couldn't commit to that.
For
sure. Which is probably fair.
The main girl is also not great. Like I was really pulled out by how fast she goes from, okay, she doesn't know what's going on. The doctor lady seems kind of nice, but she has to go on a little exploration trip with Ileana. And then she tries to escape and then she can't get out. And that makes her so mad that she gets into this quick little battle with Ileana. Ileana disappears. And the next scene, she's trying to commit suicide.
Yeah.
And I was like, this all feels like off. Feels rushed. I don't buy the performance. I don't know that I buy that she's already wanting to kill herself. And that's probably an acting thing. Like, I understand on paper.
Yeah.
They're trying to say, like, she's having such a hard time. Her family's gone. She has nothing to live for. But the actress was not doing it for me, man. How about, are there no other staff at the hospital? I was just thinking about like who's serving the food and stuff. Cause at the end, I mean, you never see anybody else. And then the doctor dies and then they're like, we can just go. Well, like who was cleaning the bathrooms?
Maybe it's
who
served the food? Cause Roberto, he's the one washing the dishes all the time.
Oh, so he's making the food and serving it too. Shipping it in there.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I like it is that is a good question. I didn't even think about that.
You never see another person. I mean, Roberto is killing it with the dishes for sure.
I love that. Like we see like three shots of him doing the dishes.
Yeah.
Do we ever see anybody else doing chores?
No, he's just crushing it. So you know what I mean? It was just a strange experience. I went into it thinking the movie was going to be terrible. It actually exceeded my expectations. I had fun. There's some stuff I like, but it's far from perfect still. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I guess, one, I'm kind of surprised because normally, and I think you and I have had this conversation before, like it's fun to talk about movies that are mind-blowing. A really bad movie is fun for a different reason.
Right, yeah.
Really, like, what's crazy is a lot of the times, like, movies between, like, you know, 40% and 80% are kind of the hardest to talk about. Not according to Rotten Tomatoes, but, like, according to your own kind of internal percentage. Right. Because it's just, like, there's often less to really get, like, gain some momentum with, I guess. But this was the rare, and maybe Dark Phoenix falls in this category too, where I'm like, this was not bad enough to be fun as a bad movie. And it was not good enough for me to be like raving about it. But I was like, whatever it was doing, it kept me weirdly locked in the entire time. And that is like, I feel like I have to make a point that that's a rare thing.
Yeah. I want to add a category though. I think the other category of podcast is what our podcast was mostly founded on, and that's taking a movie that has 40% and actually having a pretty good experience with it and then wanting people to see it in a different light and analyzing why that got a low score. And I feel like Dark Phoenix and the New Mutants are kind of that. Like, that's fun for us to do, for sure. We also love the Spider-Man 3s of the world and Daredevils of the world, where it's just a disaster, and then that's kind of funny. The horror, the tragedy, I can't. You know, that's kind of fun to do.
The brutality of it.
The brutality of it. The Dark World stuff, you know? So that's fun, too.
Yeah.
And then the absolute highs of the high, like the No Way Homes, the Infinity War, Endgame, the WandaVisions, Loki season 2. Those are really fun to talk about for me because I get so revved up that as I'm describing it to you, I get chills. Like I picture myself being there. I think personally, this falls into that convincing people that it's actually a pretty decent category, like Dark Phoenix. But the hardest thing to do on the podcast is that movie that is 75 to 85% and is mostly good, but for whatever reason, just doesn't give me chills. Those are the movies that are hard to come in and talk about, I think. Honestly, Deadpool was a little bit like that, where I liked it.
Yeah.
I just don't have that much to add.
Yeah.
Like, is that fair?
Also, no, it's totally fair. And I think it's also... Deadpool is a great example, even as a comedy, because it's not like you go into it knowing it's a comedy and then it does comedy pretty well consistently, but it's not something that like I think Thor Ragnarok, part of what makes it work is it's so surprising. Like, and I think the comedy, like you can come on the podcast to be like, oh my gosh, like I was like, losing it left and right because you just don't see the things coming.
Good point.
But yeah, you're exactly right. That entire system you just came up with, I think, makes sense.
It that a little bit deals with the expectations. Like Ragnarok caught us so off guard. But yeah, you go into Deadpool and you kind of leave going, that was exactly what I thought it would be, and it did it well. I don't need to just repeat all the jokes. I mean, we've said this famously a lot about Winter Soldier, which we think is a top 10 Marvel Cinematic Universe film and one that I would gladly watch right now. But it's a movie that I find myself not revisiting all the time. And I remember recording that podcast years ago with you thinking, man, I just don't know that I added that much to the conversation. All I said was, man, the elevator scene is sick. Wow, the Helicarrier stuff is awesome. You know what I mean? Like everyone knows.
Yeah. No, and that is kind of like, yeah, that's exactly how I felt with Deadpool, which is a sign of a great, it's a sign of a really good, sometimes great movie. I think both of those movies could be considered great superhero films. But yeah, you're totally right. Like, this is in that, you're required to dig in deeper when there's a movie that you know isn't supposed to be good. And sometimes, like, it's always nice to me to throw in movies like Daredevil because I'm thinking, like, am I just falling into a pattern of subverting expectations? Like, is it like, okay, I thought this was going to be bad and so now I'm making it good, and I thought this was going to be good and now I'm making it bad?
It's a palate cleanser to remind you, no, there are real bad movies out there.
Yep. Because, look, I would have loved nothing more than to come on and be like, man, Daredevil was just a banger. I loved it. And that was not my experience.
But, no doubt. I love this conversation. And I'm going to wrap this episode here in a second. But I love this. This is kind of meta talk. This is you and I talking as podcast hosts. Because I totally agree. I like to have the crazy good films and the crazy bad films just to calibrate my brain. Otherwise, we get so lost in watching stuff. I'm with you.
I
think that's why, Dark Phoenix surprised me so much. And this movie is surprising me. Not because I think it's great. I'm going to share my rankings here in a second. But you take an expectation in for sure. And yes, Daredevil helps calibrate, just like when you put on Infinity War or Civil War every once in a while. Like, go put on Ragnarok or Civil War if you haven't watched it in 5 years, and you'll be like, oh, yeah, like, I forgot. This had some serious magic, you know?
Yeah.
This is tight.
Yeah. No, for sure. I think it's going to be interesting after we kind of reflect on this whole journey here, because, you know, in the MCU with our rewatch, especially our original rewatch, I don't think any movie had, every movie was fresh. I mean, famously, like all of the Infinity Saga films were fresh. I think the lowest maybe is Thor or the Thor 2.
Captain Marvel,
I think, was the lowest one.
If you don't include Captain Marvel.
Oh, well, but Captain Marvel's critic score was like 80 something, right?
Was it? Well, anyways, don't check it.
I think
it,
so. But yeah. And this is like, you know, we covered that some once we started the Spider-Man stuff. But I also think that, like, you know, to the point of calibration, I think for the most part, we were kind of in lockstep with the general consensus going through those Spider-Man films. Like, I think if anything, we maybe felt that you should flip-flop The Amazing Spider-Man 2 and The Amazing Spider-Man.
Mm, yes. Yep.
But otherwise, like, I think, you know, we came out of that feeling about as we probably thought we would.
2-1 Amazing Spider-Man 2, Amazing Spider-Man 1, Spider-Man 3, or maybe Spider-Man 3 and Amazing Spider-Man 1 flip-flop. But yeah.
I think that's still right. But anyway, the X-Men watch has just been interesting because there are so many movies that are so all over the place. It's been going on for so long. There are movies like First Class, like you're saying, that so many people consider to be great. And I'm not saying it's a bad movie or anything, but it doesn't, to me, hold up, especially compared to some of the films you just rattled off, like Marvel films and otherwise. And I guess it just, it leaves me wondering, like, what are these things that impact our watch experience so heavily? Like, I think Neil in our Discord was just posting about this with Daredevil and Dark Phoenix.
So good. And Elektra,
I find that fascinating.
The film.
Yes. Yeah. I saw that, which I need to watch again, apparently. Yeah. But I was just looking out of curiosity at the New Mutants reviews. I don't know if you had looked at some of those on Rotten Tomatoes.
And think about your viewing of Quantumania with me in LA, and then your viewing of Quantumania with Candace in Austin, you know?
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, it's crazy how much it can literally change your, like, it's not even something where you are wanting, like, secretly liking something, but like have to pretend you don't to be cool. It's like in the moment, it can actually change the way that something hits you. Mm-hmm. And like there are layers to that, I think, but like I'm reading these New Mutants reviews and I just don't agree. Like, I mean, there are a couple of these, like,
think about how much stuff had changed for those reviewers by 2020. The context is so important too, versus 2003 as an example, you know, with Daredevil.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just, it's interesting to me, like the conversations you and I were having, like in 2020, certainly in 2019, when we started the podcast, like we talked about how we were so frustrated with other film studios kind of like bringing the quality down for the superhero genre in general, like how people lumped in all the Marvel movies with these other movies. And, you know, like having gone back through also, I guess, a lot of the DC stuff, getting ready for The Flash, like you and I have now covered a lot of superhero movies. And
yeah, we have. Oh my gosh.
Like, I stand by that in so many ways still, especially when it comes to the way DC handled stuff. But I always thought that I lumped X-Men in there too. And I don't know. Like, I'm just trying to figure out, like, were people in, you know, like Marvel didn't have any movies come out in 2020, but Endgame was obviously in 2019, and that was like massively successful right before Dark Phoenix was hated, and then this was hated. And I'm like, so it's not that like there was just total, like it's not that superhero fatigue had taken over in such a way to where, you know, it prevented the Avengers movie from being the biggest movie of all time. But maybe it was like, it was the fact that people thought the franchise wasn't going anywhere. So it was just kind of a waste of time. And so then you sit down and you're kind of like, whatever. Like, there's nothing really in this movie that can get me excited. Whereas you and I are kind of looking back at it now, knowing that, like, on the one hand, like, it doesn't really matter where it's going because it ended. And on the other hand, it kind of does matter now because of Deadpool and Wolverine, at least like enough for us to have some kind of investment. I don't know. I'm thinking out loud, obviously. I just think it's a weird question.
One, it's midnight. I think we need to get some sleep because I think we're starting to go crazy here from all recording. Two.
Oh, that's fair.
I think it's a fascinating discussion. Three, I'd be almost interested to explore this fully in a separate episode. Almost like this is a scientific study I also would love to get to the bottom of, because I think it's all of it, right? It's all the things you said. Like, take me as one example. Use me as your test subject. Like, why had I never seen Dark Phoenix and New Mutants? So much goes into that. One, I'm not just a superhero film fan in general. Like, I hadn't seen a lot of the DC stuff. I don't just like superhero movies because of them being superhero movies. So just because you put out a new one, I'm not one of the people that just rushes to see it. But I was so invested in the MCU. Days of Future Past had kind of reset the timeline, so these movies felt peripheral. And then it was coming out at a time when the Marvel Cinematic Universe was going so well that I just started classifying anything that came out as garbage, trash. They don't know how to do it like Marvel. They don't know how to get their stuff right. And so I just didn't even watch it. I didn't even give it a chance. So how much of that is playing into people's opinion too? You know, like now that I've gone through it all, I enjoyed the movie and I think it's definitely better than 40 or 50%.
Yeah. So, oh yeah.
What a study.
I do. I think you're right. We should dig into that, even just from the like podcast perspective, because I do wonder how much of it is like a blood in the water thing. Like, I sometimes think that like in the waning years of the Infinity Saga, or I don't know, maybe like at its zenith, however you want to look at it. Like, I feel like some people that don't really like superhero movies and were just kind of like it was happening all around you at that point because the MCU was so successful. I remember feeling like some of those people in my life were just frustrated because they were so tired of Marvel Studios being everywhere and also being so good, where it was like they didn't like the movies, but they also knew that like they couldn't really like take shots at them because they were just so well executed that were, it's almost like, I don't know, like once blood in the water, like the glass shatters, maybe it's like you start looking at something and looking for the flaws. And I wonder if that even speaks to how parts of Phase 4 and 5 were experienced within the MCU, like once a narrative starts and stuff that we've talked about there.
Oh,
yeah, I don't know.
The groupthink of it and how willing and readily were you going into films with an open mind and an open heart and wanting them to be good? Or were you wanting to find flaws? Were you wanting them to be bad? for so many different reasons. Okay, different episode. Here's how I'm going to end today's episode. We still have to do Deadpool 2, and we have to do Logan, which will be fascinating.
Yeah.
Some people claim one of the best superhero films of all time. Here's where I am at on my current ranking slash scale. I do think it's appropriate, given all of that discussion, to kind of give you an update with what I think my X-Men journey has been. And I know the slight numbers have shifted, but I kind of am getting a gauge now of how this sits compared to the best movies and worst movies of all time. So for me, number one is Days of Future Past. And as I've said before, that's like a 90%. Like, I don't think it's as good as the top 10 Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, but it's like right there. It's like right there with Guardians 3 in that.
Yeah.
Does a ton of stuff well. I would say X2 is right behind that. So for me, number two is X2 with like a, you know, like an 88%. Those two are pretty neck and neck. Then I would still go X1, just given the time and the context, but there is a drop off there. So X1 is probably 80%.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would go Deadpool with like an upper 70s.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Like, so Deadpool number four at like 78%. Then I'd go Dark Phoenix at number five with like 75%, not that much worse than Deadpool, maybe 72%. Then I'd go First Class at number six. X-Men First Class would be in the upper 60s now. Like, it has fallen from what I originally thought. And then here's where I am undecided. I think I'm going to go The Wolverine at like 60%, 61%. And then New Mutants right there. So The Wolverine at number seven, New Mutants at number eight, both in like the low 60s, upper 50s range. Then there's a pretty big drop off, in my opinion, to Apocalypse, which I'd say is like 50 or 48%, 47%, and then X3, and then Origins way at the bottom. And if you included Daredevil, that'd be the very, very bottom. So far, I would say what's been surprising for me is that only Daredevil, Origins, X3, and Apocalypse, and remove Daredevil for a second while we just talk X-Men, only Apocalypse, X3, and Origins I thought were pretty much downright bad. Like, so many missteps. And those are the three that are honestly tarnishing the entire X-Men name, that and their lack of continuity. Those are the two things that's tarnishing what is otherwise actually not the end of the world. Like, now that New Mutants and Dark Phoenix are better films than I originally thought, New Mutants, Wolverine, First Class, Dark Phoenix, Deadpool, X1, X2, Days of Future Past are not bad. And I'm anticipating adding Deadpool 2 and Logan to that conversation. So really, it's the timeline errors, the time it came out, and three films dragging it down. And so I'm so thankful for this journey, because I have such a fresh perspective on all this, and it really has made me appreciate it more.
I think that my list is almost the exact same as yours, which I guess makes sense. But yeah, I think you're right. It's going to be like, it will be interesting not to to see just how this watch finishes out, but also like, now that we do have this kind of test case for how a franchise ages, and like how it goes through also like growing pains, like whatever was going on in the early 2010s for the X-Men franchise, and just wondering, like, obviously there's so many differences between X-Men and the MCU, and I'm not trying to make any unflattering comparisons, but I just think that there maybe are some weird lessons to be learned in terms of like building and keeping momentum, and when it's squandered irrevocably. I don't know. But yeah, your rankings are I think like exactly the only difference for me is I'm still always wrestling with X2 versus Days of Future Past. But it's the same as Spider-Man 2 and No Way Home for me.
Right. You have inspired those rankings for me anyway. So that's why they're falling in a similar place. Like, you were the one that maybe had me switch First Class around a little bit. And I know you've been wrestling with X2 and Days of Future Past. And so I'm now currently wrestling with New Mutants and Wolverine. I think I enjoyed watching New Mutants more, but who knows? Anyways, we got to go to bed. We got to go to bed. Guys, this has been so much fun. We love you. It's really late for Robbie and I. Hope everyone's doing well. Hope you enjoyed this. Let us know your thoughts. We love chatting with you. We'll see you next time right back here on Friends from Work.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.